You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
It wasn't a bunch of fundy Christians I pissed off when I first started writing about sex. It was a bunch of gay guys at AIDS organizations. One of the slogans promoted by HIV prevention AIDS organizations early on in the 1980s was "Have more sex with fewer people." That was a slogan we revived during the monkeypox outbreak a couple of years ago. But by the early 90s, that slogan, "More sex, fewer people," had been retired in favor of "It doesn't matter how many people you have sex with, it matters how." By the early 90s, AIDS org seemed more invested in battling shame around gay sex than fighting AIDS. And in an early example of what would now be described as audience capture, AIDS orgs in the 90s stopped telling gay men what we needed to hear and started telling gay men what we wanted to hear. And what a lot of us wanted to hear, maybe most of us wanted to hear, was that you could safely have sex with as many men as you wanted so long as you used condoms. I was in my 20s then. I'd been to a few hodeos, I'd seen some things, and I'd come to know some things. And one of the things I knew in my bones, based on my lived experience and the lived experiences of my friends, was that how many mattered too. How mattered? Of course how mattered, and still does matter. But how many? Yeah, that mattered too. Because the more people you had sex with, the more strangers you let into your apartment or your ass, the likelier you were to wind up having sex with someone who was terrible, someone who didn't give a shit about you. It was just an odds thing, a numbers game. The more people you have sex with, obviously the greater your chances of drawing the short straw at some point and finding yourself in a room with someone jerk enough to remove a condom during sex without telling you. Stealthing, it's called now. We didn't have a name for it then, but then the consequences could be deadly. The odds were also greater of finding yourself in a room with someone who would coerce you to have sex you didn't want to have, or pressure you to engage in sex acts you'd already ruled out. There was another slogan that made these early experiences a little worse for then young me and my then young gay pals, because in addition to being told it didn't matter how many men we had sex with, it only mattered how, we'd also been told that gay men were our brothers. That I never bought. I have brothers. Neither of them have ever given me an STI or broken my heart. And I looked at that slogan and I thought, they don't tell young straight women that straight men are their brothers for reasons that seemed perfectly obvious to young gay me at the time. But it was my friends who bought it. Man, I saw them go into gay bars with their guards down because they were surrounded there by their brothers, men who had only their best interests at heart. All of this came flooding back to me as I read Sarah Maslin Neer's piece in the New York Times this weekend about Hacienda, New York City's most prominent sex club, as it's called in the headline. Hacienda was founded a dozen or more years ago by a married poly couple, Andrew and Beth Sparksfire, and a personal trainer turned sex educator who goes by Kenneth Play. According to the group's website, Hacienda is a community that celebrates sexuality, educates the curious, and creates opportunities to meet new friends and lovers. We do this by hosting play parties and socials, creating spaces where people can learn, gather, and responsibly enjoy and explore their sexuality. Well, as it turns out, some of the people who spoke to Neer for her piece in the New York Times about Hacienda, all of them women, had the worst nights of their lives at Hacienda. Despite the group's commitment to consent, people were violated at their parties and in their townhomes, because turns out Hacienda isn't just a venue or a club night or a party. It's a movement with charismatic leaders and a growing real estate portfolio. Hacienda, Neer writes, has capitalized on the sex positivity movement in a way few other groups have, charging rent in a cluster of Brooklyn townhouses to people who want to live in the scene full time. One of the women Neer spoke to chose to live in the group's townhouse because, quote, it was a place where she did not have to hide the fact that she was polyamorous and kinky because all of her housemates were too. The founders of Hacienda, in response to the New York Times questions, described the experiences of the women who shared their stories with Near as outliers. And when you consider that thousands of people have attended thousands of sex parties at Hacienda over the last dozen years and change, and there have been probably tens or hundreds of thousands of sexual encounters at those parties, that doesn't strike me necessarily as untrue. But what disturbs me while reading the piece was the way the group handled reports of sexual violations internally, which is the Catholic Church has shown us again and again, and cops investigating cops show us again and again, never works. Those internal investigations, never about rooting out bad actors, always about protecting an organization and its leadership from getting a black eye. And while I do think it's possible the numbers of people who were violated at Hacienda events may have been small, and their experiences, again quoting Hacienda's leadership, outliers, I do feel for the women who were victimized at these events. The message being sent to members of an organization like Hacienda is essentially that other members and attendees and housemates can be trusted because they were also members and attendees and housemates. This kind of social messaging can lead people to lower their guards. And what gave me deja vu reading the piece was the sense that the members at Hacienda were being told it didn't matter how many people you were having sex with, because you were having sex with people you met here at Hacienda. And these people were your brothers. My takeaway, besides always, if you can, go to the authorities, not the authorities in the church or at the club, the authorities, is to always be wary when you think people might be telling you what you want to hear. I lost friends who wanted to hear they could have sex with as many men as they wanted, that it didn't matter how many, only mattered how, and I watched friends be crushed emotionally when they realized some gay men actually weren't their brothers. Now, I think the average guy at Hacienda may be a better bet where safety and consent are concerned than the average guy a woman might pick up in a bar in Brooklyn. But just because a guy is at a Hacienda event doesn't mean he's a good guy. Just like every guy in that gay bar isn't your brother. And if you fucked every guy in the gay bar in one night, the one who wasn't your brother might take advantage of you in that moment. Yeah. I'm not blaming the victims. I'm blaming the messaging and our desire to believe things we wished were true. Things like, hey, you're among friends here, you're safe. These men are your brothers. Everyone here is all about consent. Messages that lull people into a false sense of security. Which is why you have to go into every space, particularly sex spaces if you want to go into them, knowing that there are bad actors everywhere. No one deserves the benefit of the doubt just because they're gay. And no one deserves the benefit of the doubt just because they sat through a consent seminar. And no organization deserves to be free from scrutiny just because its leaders may have the best of intentions. All right, Magnum subs, we've got another Savage Love Live coming up for you on March 21st at noon Pacific time. I will be answering your questions live on Zoom. You can get them to me early and often by going to savage.love/askdan. We will send a Zoom link out on the morning of the show to all Magnum subs. If you'd like to join us for Savage Love Live, which is always a blast, become a Magnum sub now at savage.love. And on today's show, on the micro, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum, Lara Starr is here. She's the writer who coined the term Sister X. She's here to explain what a Sister X is and how meeting your Sister X's can be profoundly healing. To hear our convo, you will have to subscribe at savage.love. In addition to the magnum, more calls, more guests, no ads, Savage Lovecast, you get the entirety of Savage Love, access to the Savage Lovecast archive starting in 2006. People who listen micro only get to go a year back into the archives. So if you want to travel in time and binge Lovecasts, become a magnum sub now, and you can do both. All right, let's get to today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Dipsy. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, sexy audio stories designed by women for women. Get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/savage. Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a 4-week trial. Do not wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E.
Hi, Dan. I'm a cishet woman living in New York, 37, and I'm dating a 41-year-old cishet man. He's a white guy from the South, and we've been dating a couple months. Things have been mostly going really well. He's super kind and sweet and thoughtful. But as we're beginning to get more serious, I'm noticing some things about him that I'm not sure if these are deal breakers or like I should try to work on it with him. I'm finding that he's like really grossed out by periods, like even the mention of them. It's not like it's something that I bring up a ton, but it's like if it works his way casually into conversation, he acts like the most disgusting thing ever has been mentioned and like he is unable to handle even the thought of it. This is funny to me, but also I'm annoyed by it and in thinking more about the future. We both want to get married and have children. To me, it feels very like he's very immature for not even being able to handle the mere mention of a period when, you know, in the past I've dated men that not only can like be like, hey, talk to me about how you feel, but will initiate going down on me during a period. That's never something that I would expect. It's always about the person's comfort levels. But in thinking big picture about making a life with somebody, I don't know if I can do that with somebody who finds something that is natural and normal to be disgusting. I'm wondering what your take on this is. Is it worth trying to take on the emotional labor of educating him? If so, are there any resources that you recommend to a privileged white guy to try to get him to stop being grossed out by something that's normal and natural? Like for my own self, I want a kind, supportive partner. And then in thinking ahead, if we have children together, if we have a daughter, I want her to feel loved and supported by both her parents at all times of her life, including when she starts her period. If we have a son, I don't want him to be raised to shame women about this sort of thing. Would love your thoughts.
This isn't an exact parallel. And I apologize in advance to any listeners who find this insulting. And frankly, it is, I guess, kind of the comparison or even the evoking is a little insulting. But listening to you describe this 41-year-old straight guy who is so freaked out by blood, by periods, kind of made me think of those gay guys I've met in the course of my gay life who were so freaked out by poop. It's a butt. You're fucking a butt. Shit happens. It's a pussy. You're fucking a pussy. Blood happens, and blood is not stinky and much less offensive and richly symbolic of the power of pussy and what pussy can do. And so seems to me that if we expect mature, reasonable, secure gay guys to be rational and not go to pieces if there's a little poop during some butt fucking, just to go jump in the shower and roll with it and do something else, you have a right to expect as a vagina haver, as a uterus haver, as a pussy haver, that the straight guy that you're fucking is not going to freak the fuck out and go to pieces when your pussy does what your pussy does, which is once a month shed its uterine lining. All right, what are you willing to settle for? What are you willing to put up with? You say you want to start a family. You say you really like this guy and he's a good guy, 41 years old. He's gotten away with this period phobic, pussy phobic bullshit his entire fucking adult life. The odds that you're going to be able to reprogram this guy in the amount of time you have left to start a family yourself. You say you want to have children. You say you're 37 years old. You're going to have to get started at some point. And if you want to do that with this guy, if you kick that can down the road until you help him work through this bullshit, who knows how long that could take? So if what you really want are kids and you want kids with this guy, you may have to put up with his bullshit. I wouldn't put up with his bullshit. I wouldn't have kids with this guy if I was a woman. Especially, you know, I was shouting this before you got to it, but you said it. What if you have a daughter who at 10, 11, 12, 13 has her first period? And yeah, what then? I grew up in a house with a sister and a mom, and there are occasionally tampons floating in the toilet. And we, my two brothers and I, my dad, we didn't go to fucking pieces. It was just part of living with women and loving women, loving my mom, loving my sister. Is he capable of loving a daughter if he's going to freak the fuck out? Look, if you want to have a baby in a hurry and you want to have a baby with this guy and you're willing to maybe settle, I think you at least need to have one big throwdown, maybe more than one big throwdown, confrontation with him about it. Dude, what the fuck? What the fuck is your problem with pussy and what it does? You should be into blood if you're into pussy, I think, personally, just like you should be into spunk if you're into dick, and tolerant occasionally of accidents happening if you're into butt. Bodies do what bodies do. And women's bodies do this kind of miraculous thing once a month in preparation for the insanely miraculous thing they do a couple of times over the course of their lives, and having a baby. If I was a woman, I don't think I would trust a straight guy who is that squeamish and immature about my body and what it does. And I wouldn't settle for a man who didn't love me and my female body in this alternate universe thought experiment. I wouldn't settle for him. But you get to make your own choice here. And it seems to me that it would be a reasonable choice. If you're 37 years old and you liked him well enough and you were willing to either put up with this or blow it the fuck up and have some conversations with him and a therapist and try to work through this, maybe with some exposure therapy. And maybe he's worth it. Maybe he's worth that time. Maybe he's worth that effort.
Hello, Dan. I'm in my mid-30s. My parents divorced about 5 years ago when my father came out to the family as gay. It was quite a shock to all of us. It took quite a long time to digest. I'm in a really good place with it now. He has a lovely partner who seems to treat him very well. I recently went to their apartment for dinner, and it actually seems like they're very happy, which is nice. I had not seen my father happy for a long time. The problem is the end of my parents' marriage was very, very difficult for my mother. Her life was in a bit of a shambles. She was basically living in the ashes of their marriage in my family home, which is too big for her now, living alone. So she's currently moving to a smaller apartment, which again takes a lot of mourning. The problem is I'm getting married at the end of the summer. Want both of my parents to be there. They have not seen each other in over 4 years. I don't know how to broach the subject with my father that I don't want his partner to come. They've been together for over 3.5 years. My mother has never met his partner. I have nothing against their relationship. It seems like my father is very happy, and I want the day to be about family, and I want everyone to be comfortable. So I don't know what to do. Do I say to my mother that my father's partner is coming and perhaps try to shield her from that? She gets very emotional at these things. I know she's going to be emotional on the day. Or do I talk to my father? He's a very rational person, and just say, I do like your partner, but I don't want them to come. I don't want it to be awkward. It's already going to be awkward enough that my parents have to see each other. I'm slightly dreading it. I don't know what to do to make it easier. Any advice?
Elope. Whatever you do, it's going to be the wrong thing. You're either going to disinvite your dad's boyfriend and risk your dad being hurt, or you're going to let your dad bring his boyfriend to the wedding and risk hurting your mom, or the boyfriend's not going to come to the wedding. And your mom and dad are going to be in the same room together for the first time, and it's going to be awkward, and you're not going to be in the moment. You're not going to be experiencing your wedding. You're going to be projecting yourself out of the room and observing your parents at all times, worried, particularly for your mother. And my God, I'm really angry at your dad. You know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70, 80 years ago, a lot of people who knew themselves to be homosexual, who knew themselves to be gay, married opposite sex partners, found people that maybe that they loved as friends, and married them and lied to them all their lives about loving them, not just as friends, but romantically and sexually. And a lot of gay people and lesbian women, gay men and lesbian women, did that under duress because you couldn't be out and gay. Parents were together for 30 years, 1994. Your dad could have been out and gay. He made a choice, not under duress, to find a woman, your mom, and lie to her all of their lives together, and then decided to come out. And I'm glad that your dad is out now. I'm glad he's in a better place. But oh my God, it's not just the end of the marriage and the shit show at the end and the breaking up and the separating that traumatized your mother. It's your mother looking back over the 30 years she was with your father and feeling humiliated and used and feeling as if she had never been loved and being left most likely in a place where she doesn't trust her own instincts, that she was lied to by your dad all their married life and she believed him. She's going to have a really hard time trusting any man ever again because she fell for your father's completely optional bullshit. I'm sorry, like 70 years ago. Yeah, 70 years ago, gay men married straight women, lied to them because they had no choice. 30 years ago, that was a choice. What your father did was wrong. My God, 40 years ago, I was thinking about, you know, I was 15 years old and realizing I was gay and my options were lose my family and everyone that I know by coming out, which of course I didn't want to do. And option B, you know, the option that would make it possible to never come out was to find some girl, some woman, and lie to her all my life, all our life together. Have a couple of kids with some woman and lie to her. And at 15 years old, in 1979 in Chicago, I was like, I can't do that. That would be wrong. And your dad in 1994 was like, yep, that's what I'm going to do. That would be right for me. And that was so fucking selfish. So my sympathies as a gay man are with your mom here. And I think you need to prioritize your mom's safety and comfort. I don't think you should not invite your dad, but I think you should tell mom and dad, no plus ones for you guys. The first time you're going to be in a room together since the divorce. Yeah, no plus ones. And if I were your dad's boyfriend, I would get out in front. If I was your dad's boyfriend, I would have come to you already and said, look, I know this is going to be hard for your mom, and I ache for your mom. And so you do not have to invite me to your wedding. Let's all go out to dinner. We can go out to dinner and celebrate you and your father and me and your fiance, but I'm going to step back. That would be a beautiful gesture on your dad's relatively new boyfriend's part. It would be the most meaningful gift he could give you on your wedding day, was relieving you of a little bit of the stress that's hardwired into this situation. Some of the stress, not all of the stress, your parents coming together at your wedding, ugh, it's going to be stressful. Your mom having to be in the same room with the man your father is with now, a physical manifestation of the lies that she was told all her life, of the betrayal, made flesh and blood, an abstraction to her. Of course, he's a person, but to your mother, he's a symbol and a painful one. Yeah, there's no winning it. Elope, 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 run off, get married, come home, have dinner, little party with mom at mom's new apartment and a party at dad's, and spare yourself the stress of your parents coming together at your wedding. Or you can take dad's boyfriend to dinner, risk blowing up that relationship, and just say, look, this is going to be really hard for my mom. How would you feel? I want to have a relationship with you. You're good for my dad. You guys are good together, but I can't ask my mom to come to my wedding in good conscience because it's going to cause her so much pain to have to interact with you, not because of the person you are, but because of what you mean and what you mean, not just in this moment, but what you mean about her marriage that she invested so much time and emotional energy in over decades. Can we spare her that? Will you forgive me for prioritizing my mother on my wedding day? Let's see what he says. This episode is brought to you by Dipsy. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, sexy audio stories designed by women for women. Dipsy brings scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. Discover stories at Dipsy about second chance romances, adventurous vacation flings, and hot and heavy hookups. There's also a section at Dipsy for me. The him and him tag lets you perv out to stories of men getting it on. And there's a growing library of fantasy series with vampires, Greek gods, hello, and fairy smut to explore the bounds of your pleasure and the bounds of your imagination. New content is released every week, so in between listening to your favorite stories again and again, you can always find something new to explore. Dipsy also has soothing sleep stories, wellness sessions, and sexy written stories for you to read. Let Dipsy be your go-to place to spice up your me time, explore your fantasies, relax and unwind, and heat things up with a partner. For listeners of this show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/savage. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Go to dipsystories.com/savage.
Hi, Dan, 35-year-old, male, mostly straight. Me and my wife just opened our relationship about 6 months ago. The catalyst for the opening the relationship was this guy that she worked with sort of was like, hey, let's be in a relationship, essentially. My wife and I have always kind of talked about open relationship as a possibility. We've been together 7 years. I'm okay with it, but still kind of feeling funky about them kind of getting a head start. And, you know, in the beginning we said only open relationship, no poly. And I think we have maybe differing opinions or definitions of poly. And like, I guess a question would be, I don't know how to manage that because she's not dating around. She's only with this guy. They have a trip planned this weekend and he's also a tattoo artist. She has a dying relative that she's very close with and she's getting this like memorable thing. This guy's going to tattoo her. I don't know. It just feels really intimate and it's moving toward poly. And I guess, I don't know. I'm just having a hard time squaring that and trying to figure out how to be okay with this and what to do next.
So a tattoo artist was the catalyst, huh? They so often are.
Yeah. And, you know, I think my call was a bit disjointed. He's not a full-on tattoo artist. He's a cop and he does tattooing on the side or something. But yeah, that was really the thing that made it feel like I was a term that you use, PUD, where I was like, holy shit, it's like getting a DUI. I'm like, it'll never happen to me. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, this is happening so quickly that I think I actually am.
So your girlfriend came to you and said, we've had a monogamous relationship. Was that an opt-in conversation you had initially when you got together that we were going to be monogamous, or was it a default setting as it so often is for straight couples?
Yeah, it was default, though I will say we've had conversations around having an open relationship. I was very surprised that when it came up because I felt like we weren't in the greatest of spots to open up. So it wasn't a full-on surprise, but we hadn't talked about it in a couple years. But she did make it clear in the beginning, I guess.
And when she came to you, was it like, all right, newsflash, I'm fucking this guy from work, this tattoo artist, cop tattoo artist, and you just have to be okay with that. I'm unilaterally moving us out of the category we had been in together to this new category. I'd like to stay together with you, but you gotta swallow this, cop.
She did come to me. I will commend her, like since I called you and we've had many conversations, many frank, open conversations, honest ones. You know, I think we're in a better spot now. Mm-hmm. But that's how it started. She's like, hey, this guy's put his cards on the table.
And he knows about you and he's not trying to take her away from you. He wants her to have you still? Or can you not speak to his intentions?
I can't speak to his intentions necessarily. I think he is in a relationship that's not working out. So I don't know if that's on the way out or whatever, but you know, that's something that I thought of.
There's a metaphor I've used to describe the situation that you're in conversing with other people on the show and also some close friends, where, you know, it had been a monogamous relationship by choice or by default. And then one person was like, surprise, this is now an open relationship. This is a fait accompli. This is happening. And the other person suddenly had to be a PUD or became a PUD. And what I say is, like, you know, it's not okay if your spouse buys a new house without telling you, right? That's a decision that a couple should make together, buying a house where they're both going to live. So if your partner buys a house and didn't tell you about it, you can be mad about the fact that they bought you the house. You should go take a look at the house. Maybe you'll like the house. Like, look around the house, let go of the anger about how you came to own it together. And then if you like the house, you can enjoy living there. You can let go of the anger about how you wound up in that house. And maybe it's the house you wanted all along, right? And it's sort of the same thing with this kind of unilateral. There's this dude from work. This is going to happen. I'm redefining the terms of our relationship without really negotiating those terms with you. And so I hope we're still together after I tell you this. You got to look around the house. And you've had a little time to look around the house. I assume they've been away on this weekend together and she's back?
So they didn't go on the weekend, but they ended up staying in town and getting a hotel. He ended up not being able to show up at the hotel, but I had no idea. So I made it through the whole night, not like thinking that they were just having this gallivant, right?
Or this poke and stick amateur tattoo session.
Actually, Stan, the tattoo ended up looking really good.
Oh, good. Well, that's good, considering you're going to have to look at it and you're going to know who put it there on your girlfriend. Like, there's a lot you're having to wrestle with here.
I'm like, listen, this is a lot to take in. I'm like, wait, hold on, tattoo? And now we're going to know this fucking guy the whole time is going to be in our life. Let's say we end up forever together. It's like, well, there's that guy on the body. But that's what I'm having a hard time with. And that's what I was hoping to talk to you about too, is just like, is it more just about me getting out there and experiencing poly life? She's come to me since and been like, I am poly, almost like a sexual identity, not truly that. But I mean, I think, is it more about me getting out there and just seeing what I'm comfortable with?
Well, it's not a race and it's not a competition.
Okay.
You know, just like one person may be ready to say I love you before the other person's ready to say I love you, and the person who's not ready shouldn't be hurried. You were kind of hurried into polyamory before you were ready. And sometimes it can feel like, well, for my own self-respect, I need to even the scales here. You're fucking somebody else. I wasn't ready for that. So now I'm going to go fuck somebody else, even though you might not quite be ready for that. You need to set aside, like, it would only be fair if I was fucking somebody else too. Maybe I'd feel better about it if I was fucking someone else too. Those are the wrong reasons to fuck somebody else. Like, sit with it. See how you feel about it. You now have this freedom that if somebody comes along that you would like to fuck, and you can look for somebody else that you might like to fuck, but don't race out and fuck somebody for revenge. That's not a good feeling when you realize somebody's fucking you to even the scales with their primary partner, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to use somebody in that way. What you want to do is sort of be open to what you're going through right now. Feel the feelings you're having right now. You're allowed to have complicated feelings, even resentment and some anger to work through with your partner. If if she wants this relationship to survive, she needs to take some responsibility for the rollout, which was not entirely consensual.
Oh, no, sir.
There's some things, emotional labor that she has to do to prove to you that you're still a priority, that she wants to be poly and be with you and wants to make this work with you. And so there's some things she has to make up to you, but then you have to decide whether your new reality, the house that you've been moved into, is a house you want to live in, which is a different decision. You just need to give this time and give yourself permission to stay if that's ultimately what you want to do, and let go of the ego that says, I got to even the scales by running out and banging somebody else right now. And again, processing the anger about how you got this house from the different decision, which is whether I want to live there or not. And you're not going to know whether you want to live there or not until you've lived in it for a little bit. This might work out, it might not. I don't want to put too shiny a gloss on it.
Yeah.
I would hope that your girlfriend has at least apologized for the unilateralness of this.
Yeah, she has. Since I called, like, I've actually been so happy, and she has really stepped up to the plate and made all these concessions to be like, we're going to have every Friday together. We're going on this trip. I mean, she's really shown me her cards, but I think this is just something that she wants, and we'll see where it goes.
Well, it's a good sign that she's not taking you for granted and not impatient or expecting you to be 100% up to speed or where she is instantly, just because that would be more convenient for her. If she's being gracious and kind and patient, those are all really good signs that you can, if you want to, if a polyamorous relationship with this person, an open relationship with this person is what you want, that you might be able to make this work. And you know what? If it works out one day, you're going to look back on this moment and the kind of unilateral decision she made with gratitude. Yeah. You're going to be like, well, that was a pivot point in my life and the kinds of relationships I have and what's been possible for me over the last 5 years, the different experiences I've had with my partner or on my own with other partners, all of like... Yeah. I always say that you come out and all the shit falls on you at once. You know, the parents' bad reaction or the friends you lost and all the stress. And then 10 years later, you're like, look at all these relationships. Look at all these people I know, these places I've been, these things I've experienced that if I hadn't come out, wouldn't have happened for me. The shit fell on you when she was just like, we're poly. I'm jumping on this tattoo artist dick. You have to eat it. Not the dick. You have to eat the situation, the circumstance.
I know.
And that was 10 tons of shit. 5 years from now, you have a girlfriend that you love and you love your partner too, and you've had some like amazing experiences and adventures together. You look back on this moment when it felt like a crisis and realized that it was this gift.
Yeah. Wow. That was lovely. Thank you for that. I'm hoping that it goes that way.
I hope so too.
I really do appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Yeah. Thank you for jumping on the phone so quickly. If you run a business, you know that every little improvement you make in how you manage your time makes a huge difference. That's why Stamps.com should be part of your strategy. Stamps.com streamlines all your mailing and shipping to turbocharge your operational efficiencies. And the Stamps.com app is like a post office in your pocket, so you can stay on top of things even if you're always on the go. Postage rates just increased again. Luckily, Stamps.com has the best discounts in the industry with rates you can't find anywhere else, like up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Plus, Stamps.com automatically tells you your cheapest and fastest shipping options so you don't have to navigate all the different carriers. Use Stamps.com to print postage wherever you do business. All you need is a computer and a printer. They even send you a free scale, so you'll have everything you need to get started. And if you need a package pickup, you can easily schedule it through your Stamps.com dashboard. Keep your mailing and shipping moving at the speed of your business with Stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code SAVAGE for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter the code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan, I am a cis straight woman living in the Bible Belt, and my boyfriend and I just bought a hot tub. It's a lot of fun. We're really enjoying it. My question is, how do you, like, invite friends over to your hot tub without giving off, like, a swingery vibe? I don't know. I feel like with our closer friends, we can do that and not make it weird, but people we're not as close with... I don't know. I don't want to seem like that Will Ferrell like character in SNL that is like super sexual and like wants to bring people into their hot tub. Is that a thing? Am I overthinking it? Are hot tubs just sexy by default and I shouldn't be inviting like people I don't know that well into my hot tub?
Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, as Sigmund Freud reportedly said, and sometimes a hot tub is just a hot tub. Maybe it would be weird for you to invite people you barely know to disrobe and jump with you into your hot tub. That is something that a person might misinterpret. A close friend, close friends, intimate friends who know that you're in a monogamous relationship and that you aren't swingers and that your hot tub is just a cigar, that your hot tub is just a hot tub, won't misinterpret the invite. It is possible, though, that people you've just met or you're just getting to know and hanging out with would interpret a, let's all take our clothes off or get into our swimsuits and hang out together in hot water. They might misinterpret that. So yeah, maybe you, if you don't want to be misunderstood, if you don't want to wind up in an awkward situation where the person in your hot tub interpreted the invitation to get into the hot tub as an invitation to make a pass. If you want to avoid all that, yeah, hot tub just for close friends who know you well enough to know that your hot tub is just a hot tub. All right, before I get to this week's listener response calls, I want to share a couple of listener comments about last week's show posted at savage.love. Says Lee, to the caller with the herniated disc, Dan is so right about what to do sexually as you're recovering. Mutual masturbation is really sexy. Make it loving, make it nasty. Talk. Telling him and or having him tell you a fantasy that is out of bounds, knowing it's just a fantasy, can be erotic and fun, and toys are there to play with on your own and together. I agree with Lee, who agrees with me. Dirty talk, dirty texts, dirty promises, the dirty shit we said we would do as soon as I was better, that got me through last summer when I was recovering from shoulder surgery. It works. It keeps your morale and other things up. Says Laura to the woman who keeps getting guys crushing on her, this has happened to me several times. My theory is that because right now you're not looking for anything serious, you're more easygoing and uncomplicated and don't have a lot of expectations, and men see this and think they've found their fantasy girlfriend, the girlfriend who's always fun and chill and sexy. Someone with more common sense would know that obviously no one is always like that in a long-term relationship, but the guy who's declaring his love on the first date, yeah, that guy definitely has no common sense and believes in fantasy girlfriends. And finally, says superstar commenter by Dan Fan, I am convinced now to go buy Molly Roden Winter's book. So much resonated with me. Dan, if you are looking for your next crusade, how about defending hierarchy? It's got a bad rep, particularly amongst millennials, but you are correct, absolutely. If you cohabit with someone, they are your primary, and if you've been in a relationship with someone for multiple years, they should receive more priority than someone you just met. I recently had a fascinating conversation with a bunch of young poly and kinky folks, the age-appropriate friends of an age-appropriate friend, and the ethical slut came up, long considered the poly Bible. And everyone in the room who was under 30 basically hissed. A couple of them literally hissed. They thought co-authors Dossie Easton and Janet Hardy, heroes to ethically non-monogamous people for decades, were too invested in hierarchy and were angry about it. Shocked me. By Dan Fan, I didn't let down our side. I defended hierarchy in that room to those kids and defended Dossie and Janet. All right. For more listener comments and more of my responses, check out Struggle Session, a weekly bonus column for Magnum subs. Goes up every Thursday at savage.love. It is also the only place on the internet where you can find my Muppet-faced man of the week. And now, listener response calls.
Hi, this is a comment on Dan's response to the 23-year-old guy from Chicago awaiting his come springa. I wonder if you didn't miss the possibility that this guy is one of those people who needs to feel connection before he jumps into bed. And maybe he's less turned on by hookups and needs to just get out there and do fun stuff with some interesting guys instead of necessarily making out on the dance floor with the hot guys. Just a thought.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to the opening of the episode where you talk about gay whale sex. I happened to listen to that episode on the same day where my dog had her first sexual slash lesbian sexual experience. She's 8 months old, and she and my partner's dog, who have been friends for a while, started licking each other's butts, then licking each other's vaginas, then humping each other, and they kept doing a combination of these things for several hours, and I was so annoyed because I kept looking online, like, I don't know, like, is my dog gay? Like, can't, like, I just wanted some acknowledgement of my gay dog, and I could not find any acknowledgement of my dog's lesbian identity online because every website says that, oh, if it's two females, it's not sexual, it's dominance play, it's anxiety, it's anything other than your dog is having lesbian sex. And I think it's very clear that that's what was going on.
This is for the caller in episode 906 with the disc herniation. I'm a physical therapist with sex worker clients that can't take off work for injuries because it would be a loss of income. So we have to figure out ways they can continue working without further injuring themselves. I can help them find comfortable positions by using modifications such as pillows or even yoga blocks. Usually with this type of injury, the injured person will need to be a passive sex partner and communicate well with the active partner if the position is uncomfortable. We could also prescribe a warm-up routine before sex, which could help mitigate symptoms before they happen. I want to double down on Dan's advice on giving into despair. When you persistently anticipate pain with sex, it will flip your nervous system into fight or flight mode, causing pain to be easily triggered. Caller, I hope that you're currently seeing a sex-positive physical therapist. If you bring up a sex goal with your PT and they look uncomfortable, then they are not the right fit. I'll never forget my patient that had a stroke paralyzing the right side of his body. His only goal was to get on all fours for his partner. With a big queer smile, I said, "We are going to work perfectly together, sir. Good luck with your rehab."
And we're going to leave it there. We've got three ways for you to get us your questions or your comments for future shows. You can record your question or your comment at savage.love/askdan, or you can make a voice memo on your phone and email your question or your comment to q@savage.love, or you can call us on our landline like it's 1985 and leave us a message at 206-302-2064. I had a great time hosting Hump 2024 Part 1 in San Francisco last weekend. Thank you to everyone who came to the show and said hi. I will be hosting personally in-person Hump screenings in Berlin on April 9th and 10th. Before Hump gets to Berlin, it's coming to Albuquerque, Madison, Long Beach, Denver, Oakland, Bellingham, New York, Baltimore, Missoula, Vancouver, and 40 more cities all over North America. Hump is coming to you. For tickets and to find out when Hump is playing in a city near you, go to humpfilmfest.com. You do not want to miss the funniest, kinkiest, dirtiest, and most entertaining film festival in the world, humpfilmfest.com. Follow me on Instagram and Threads at Dan Savage. Follow me on Blue Sky at Dan Savage. And you can still find me lurking in the bad place at Fake Dan Savage. Lara Starr and her long stories can be found at her Substack. It's Kind of a Long Story, which is at larastarr.substack.com. That is Star with two R's. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.